Welcome to episode 21 of Island CT Podcast.
A podcast about science, nature, technology, and education. And, oh, you didn't put it down.
Witchweed.
Oh, I didn't even realize this. Halloween's coming up.
That's right. Isn't this
it's
perfect?
It's perfect. Witchweed.
Yeah. Witchweed near Halloween. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Patrick.
And
together we are the hosts of the Island CT Podcast.
Great. We're recording this on October 22nd, 2015.
So we have a lot of administrative stuff.
We do.
Oh, the Mars, yeah.
Yeah, so we made a mistake last week, and I just want to make sure that we correct it so that we're straight on it. Would you like to share?
Oh, you go ahead.
Okay. So basically, we said they discovered water, but we had known that about the water. What was new is
At the time, I just wasn't sure of, you know, I was guessing.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know at the time they discovered water. Reading up about it, I remembered, oh, yeah, I think, you know, maybe I knew that, but it's not something that, you know, certainly at the time, it wasn't like a typo.
Right.
Like you do. Like, it wasn't a misspeak at the time by me. I just, out of ignorance, started to assume something incorrect.
Right.
So.
Right. So, what the finding, what was special about the finding is that the water is in a liquid state, and maybe you can describe more about that, because that's something that you dug into.
Actually, I hadn't looked at the podcast.
Oh, okay. I'll read them
and
over.
And I saw Mars.
So, what's new about that is the salt in the water lowered the freezing point. On the surface, it looks like hydrated minerals were present. Under the surface is like a briny water that's very thick. And this underground water is seeping up to the surface.
Okay, it's starting to come back to me.
Yeah, well, actually, the reason I asked Patrick to explain it is because he was telling me all about this, and I'm like, wait, and I typed it out very quickly, everything he said, so I thought he wanted to elaborate on what he had already told me.
I just didn't remember until you were just saying. Let me see what else I remember. So the mistake in the last podcast had been, we'd said it was the discovery of water that was flowing rather than frozen. Or no, it was the discovery of water.
Right.
And we had said, well, there's the ice caps on Mars. So how is that? And we're like, well, oh, that must just be frozen CO2. Instead of there really is water and it's been known for a long time. But it's all frozen water.
Right.
And this new data is spectroscopic data, I think. Okay, so now I might be making another mistake because I'm speaking from memory again, but I think it's just spectroscopic data from the surface. The signal is of hydrated minerals, and their only way that they could get that way in that place supposedly was if there had been if there was liquid water around. So you don't see liquid water on the surface, but you know there's got to be loose water molecules to get that spectrum. And the data... Oh, yeah, Moore's coming back to me.
Yeah.
Okay, the data says that if you have that at the surface, it's got to be coming from somewhere. And so the briny water under the surface is speculation because the conditions of the surface don't allow liquid water. You're on the wrong side of the triple point, so that water on Mars, there's no such stable state as liquid water on Mars. You can have frozen water if you get cold enough, but it would go directly from ice to gas on the surface because the pressure is so low. So there must be, it can only be underground water that's super saturated. I'm not super saturated, that's a technical term. I don't know if that's the case, but it would have to have a lot of minerals in it to
right.
lower the freezing point. Mm-hmm. Another possibility is if you went very deep in a cavern, it would be possible to have liquid water if there was a lot of salt in it, simply from the fact that the pressure would be higher. The atmospheric pressure would be higher. And it's possible that there are some caverns like that.
Neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is really neat.
But so you have blog entries marked here, but there's a huge administrative stuff that's not even on here.
Well, I put it down at the bottom.
At the bottom?
Yeah, where it's...
After minor topics? At the very bottom.
At the very bottom where it says, oh, where it is. Oh, recently completed project.
So, okay, I see.
So I put it in there. Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, it's the web hosting site.
Yeah, so we can do it now.
Actually, we should go into a little bit more detail about this.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And first of all, I think if you don't mind, I'm going to explain what Island CT is.
Okay, that sounds great.
And the reason is because of this web hosting situation.
Right.
So Island CT is a podcast that Kelly and I started doing when we started blogging project together in the beginning of the year.
Right. And it was a way for us to stop and share.
Yeah.
And kind of touch base on some topics of interest that we get really excited about.
Yeah. And at the time it had a different name, and then we decided to change the name, and so it didn't even exist as Island CT. But the idea came from, it was an idea you had while we were on an island around here, and that's where the name comes from. So that's why Island CT, Island Creative Time, because it had to do with time spent away from distractions and being able to be creative.
So, and we also should mention that when we go to the island, this is not an island with a hotel or a motel that we go to. This is an island that we pack into. So we pile everything into a canoe, paddle over, and we camp there.
Yeah, you can't get to it by car. There's
no
bridge to it.
Right.
And there's no ferry that it brings cars.
It gives people
even
a different image of what...
Yeah. You are really on your own. So, anyway, and why, episode 21, why am I suddenly spending a lot of time to explain what the podcast is? And the reason is, well, maybe you don't realize the reason. We were basically for our hosting... web hosting service, we were actually hosting it ourselves out of a server in our house.
Right.
And then using DDNS, a service to give an IP address. Actually, originally, we weren't even doing that.
Right.
We had a Raspberry Pi hooked up to our router, and we had port forwarding. And we could access it through the IP address. So, of course, very few people were ever going to find it. Only people that we told about that number. And then that was a pain because that would change. And then our son, Isaac, to go on with the history so that people understand. Our son, Isaac, set up the DDNS system. So now you could actually access the website by its name.
Right.
But that would have to be constantly updated as our IP address changed because of renewing our address and so on. So we knew we had to change that eventually, and so probably very few people out there have come across our website.
Oh yeah.
And so we've been slowly improving over the year, and our server died basically.
Right.
And the one that hosted it at our home. And that was the main place where we were handling the Island CT website stuff. So, and we were very busy at that time. So we had a couple months of no updating. And now we're back, but we went straight for a web hosting site. And
right.
Or web hosting company. And we're using GoDaddy. I'm not sure how that's going to turn out, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. And we did. It took us a while. It took us a little while to dig through all the information about websites.
Yeah.
And even when we sat down to sign up for one,
new problems.
It was like, huh, is this really what we want? And what does this mean compared to web hosting with or just, you know, the web page?
I think we both concluded that we probably wouldn't stay with GoDaddy.
But right. It seemed we expected that we will have to change in a year or two.
Yeah.
And
maybe
not,
we won't. I don't know.
We may not, and that would be wonderful, you know, if we don't have to. But just from what we had read earlier, that it don't be surprised if you change or.
Yeah. Anyway, so what does this mean? Well, for the first time today, so our website with the new web hosting service has been up since, it was last week sometime. It was on the weekend. It was Sunday.
It was last Sunday you got it.
So just
up
4 days ago. Mm-hmm. And I just put together an old front page with old stuff on it and a little comment saying, you know, more to come. And then I updated it with our latest two blog entries.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's where it stood since then.
Right.
And so that was 4 days ago. And today I Googled it. And I mean, I Googled for some topics that we'd covered in the blog entries. And for the very first time, it came back with our site.
Which is
so
pretty.
So people are going to find it.
Yeah. So it's exciting. And
which means that it's possible some people will hear this podcast and have never heard any of our podcasts before. Because
right.
I'm going to put this one out hopefully this Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And there won't be any backlog of podcasts to go back and be like, what? What is this website about?
Right.
They'll be number 21. Mm-hmm. All the others, we still have them. They're on the server at home, but they need to be moved over and.
Mm-hmm.
And well, that's a bit of a mess since the crash. I mean, some of them are still on the drive on our house server, but they're not on the web hosting site yet.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that's the history mm-hmm. so far. And so, but really this, for I think most people, this will be the start of Island CT as far as they're concerned, because the availability of the website has been minimal until now. And I think we're going to update the archives for both blog entries and the podcast reverse chronologically as we have time.
Right. And, you know, this is like, well, this is our 21st podcast. So I think these podcasts or the later podcasts are probably a lot better than our first ones because we're still figuring out a system and it took a bit to figure out the system.
Yep.
So, you know, listeners beware.
I
just wanted to mention that because it's taken a while and we still really enjoy it. It's a great time for us to sit together and kind of like, okay, we're going to go over all of our favorites from the last week and a half. So, Patrick, what was your last blog entry?
Okay, my last blog entry should be up right here. Wow, so if people haven't had access to this and they won't have, then this needs a bit of explaining.
Mm-hmm.
We have, we're trying to get together an ARDF group together, or club or something.
So what is ARDF?
So ARDF is Amateur Radio Direction Finding.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not trying to do anything with amateur radio groups or anything. This has nothing to do with usual amateur radio practice. It's just a sport, as far as we're concerned, we're interested in. And we have some kids that we're trying to, well, we have some kids from your school.
Right.
That are in a maker space, and we're trying to get, as one of the things we're doing, is trying to get some of them into ARDF.
Right.
And so I've been building some transmitters. And,
I do want to add, before you go too far, this has been a two-year project. The first year, it was kind of figuring out what plan to go with for building.
Yeah.
You had tried a few things.
Yeah.
You got some ideas from people by going to competitions.
Yep.
And you can talk a little more about that. And then it's finally at this point, with the experience and the collaboration of talking with others who were builders of the art of equipment. No, they had to be builders. And that, you know, really helped you come up with an idea of how you want to attack this project.
Yeah, yeah. And what I meant is not just talking, is like I had some help from some of these.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
One in particular, Jerry Boyd, you know, I had some things that weren't working, and I asked him, and he actually tested out one of his transmitters and sent me pictures from his oscilloscope showing the width. That was really cool.
And it was.
Helped me understand what was happening, so that was cool. Anyway, so the blog entry, which mine was number 41 from October 11th, titled, "Our New ARDF 80-Meter Transmitter Will Soon Be Used." And this transmitter is a prototype, so it's big. It's about, it fits in a plastic box that's about the size of a shoebox. And the idea is to build a prototype like this where you can really experiment and pull parts out and add them in, making it really modular. And then when it's all put together, then send out the plans to a place. We use OSH Park, OSH Park.
Pardon me.
To have boards made and printed circuit boards. And then that can be a lot smaller. So that's why when you look at it, it's like, oh my gosh, this is a big thing. And I said, we'll be used soon because not this last Sunday, but the Sunday before, we were going to go out and do our very first kind of, I don't know if you want to call it a practice or a learning experience with a group of kids.
Avatar Club.
With the Avatar Clubs, yeah. And we had, how many kids did we have all together?
We had 11 come out that day.
Yeah.
There's 15 in the Avatar Club.
Okay.
11 so could come 11 to kids. That outing on Saturday.
Anyway, they ran around the woods.
And
searched, you know, with their receivers and searched for the transmitters. And this transmitter that's pictured in the blog entry was actually used as one of them.
And so not that only really cool. that, which I thought was really cool, is they blogged about it, and I'm trying to find their blogs.
Your kids blogged about it?
Yeah.
Is that available on the internet? Or
I'm hoping. It was supposed to be up here. They must have put in a different thing. Okay. Sorry, I can't find it immediately, but it'll be posted on this site. We haven't linked it to this site.
But are you on archives? Or? Kelly's looking at the Avatar blog at the Smith Middle School website. Oh, this said April 2015. That's a while ago. Might actually just not be up yet.
It may not be connected to this site, but they actually have their blogs together, and there's pictures of us at Okinichi.
Cool.
Yeah. So very nice. And I thought I could show it to you as a surprise.
So, in the blog entry, I don't have... I'm not spending the time to put out a lot of description of the technical details. And I haven't in any of the blog entries for this yet because it's really not finalized. But when it's done, I will put all the schematics and everything and all the code up on the web. But, you know, I show the general layout in the blog entry and talk about it and why we made, you know, the stage we're at. Makes the blog entry makes a lot more sense and put together with the other blog entries, which won't be up on the site. But yeah, that's about it. So this prototyping system is really neat.
Right. I really love the way you put it together by connecting different modules that were that had a specific function.
Yeah, one of the modules has already been switched out three times. The one looking at the top picture, there's a tiny little blue one on the left, which is from Adafruit. The one next to it, that is the driver.
Right.
And man, am I having troubles with the driver.
Yeah.
But that's been... And the one at the top right in light blue, do you know what's special about that one?
What?
This one right there.
No.
You did some of the soldering on that one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You're looking at it from the... You know,
yeah, I'm looking at it.
From the other the opposite side. It's all the switches.
Nice. Nice.
So while we're here, I guess... isn't the next thing... let me look at... Yeah, it's your blog entry.
Right.
Next.
So...
Oh, wait a second. Yeah, did you mention... Did you say it was 31 and 32?
It was... Right. No, you're correct with your numbers. I changed the numbers up
already. Oh, so that's the old thing. Gotcha. Yeah.
So, I looked at this article, which I found fascinating, on the Himalayan mayapple plant. And two scientists, and I'm trying to get their names. I'll find them. Oh, Lan and Setley were able to isolate genes responsible for encoding...
Wait, is that Lan or you wrote down... Lau, was it L-A-U?
Lau, sorry. That's my misreading of it. Lau, thank you.
Yep.
And subtly, they came up with the gene that encodes for codophytotoxin. And what it does is it's that particular drug that's used in treating cancer. And so what's cool about this is this particular finding is unique because the other drugs are within this category of drugs of the...
I remember this. Yes.
Yes. So
it's a new... I'm getting this confused with the antibacterial class. So what's the deal?
So this one is interesting because this particular phytotoxin, which has been used to combat ovarian cancer and that, a lot of the times they have to add something to the drug to either make it more soluble or to make it so that in it helps in the absorption in people. And it changes the effect of the drug. And in this particular, with this particular option, they expect that the GM plant that's made from it will actually have both components as part of it, so there won't be any like changes that will be needed for it to be modified for human use. So that's kind of cool that they will have that. I have more specifics written about it in the article where
A CRISPR?
It's not a
CRISPR.
Okay. No. So I mentioned it earlier in one of our other podcasts.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to talk about it too much right now because it was actually...
We talked about it earlier.
Yeah, it's something we talked about earlier.
I remember, I forgot like so much about this one.
So it's pretty cool. This is, in this study, they targeted many genes at once. And it's that combination of genes that they... isolated that gave them such fantastic results. And it's just a neat finding. And it'll be one that'll be really interesting to follow to see, you know, as it, you know, they find out more about it, what happens to it? Does it make it to a market drug or, mm-hmm. you know, in the long run? Anyway, very interesting.
Okay. Oh, it kills me to go over something and I just like kind of remember and I want to remember and it's... Okay. Minor topics. Makes me wonder if we should reverse that. We've always done minor topics first and then... No, this is the good way, I guess. Okay. Oh, you have me listed first.
Yep.
Okay. You have which weed under minus topics for you?
Well, because it was from last week, and then you read about it, and we never got to it.
We never talked about it last week, okay. Mm-hmm. Or 2 weeks ago.
Right, 2 weeks ago.
We were only putting out these podcasts mm-hmm. every other week. So
I'll hold back on that.
What do you want me to hit? Let me tell you, because we haven't had time to go over. So... I'm not going to talk about why this happened, but I've been stuck for 3 days with very little access to the outside world. Anyway, I'm back. And so I worked on some PCB work, so that's that type of stuff. And I have science articles, one about exoskeletons, liquid helium.
I think we should go into the exoskeletons.
And I have some Linuxy type stuff that has to do with freedoms and the inner world of
nice.
And an interview. This is all from the magazine Linux Voice. So which of the three, building, science or tech? Software tech stuff.
Okay. How about we start with the software tech?
Software tech. Okay. So this is, I think, all from the most recent Linux Voice, issue 21. There was an opinion piece by Simon Phipps, which... I think he does the opinion piece every single time. Let me bring this up. Oh, it doesn't want to go full screen. Yeah, there we go. So we talked. I think a little bit about the Volkswagen scandal.
No, not at all.
We didn't at all.
Mm-mm.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, everybody, I think, pretty much in technology. I don't know. Without a TV, it's
with the hacking.
Yeah. Well, it's not the hacking. It's. I mean. So Volkswagen created a system in their firmware so
right.
that they could pass emissions tests
mm-hmm.
by altering the way the engine runs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And which, if not totally illegal, pretty, you know, to the extreme of being deceptive. I don't know. I've heard people say it's not, you could look at it a particular way and say that it's not legal. I have no idea. I just listen to those arguments and I'm like, mm-hmm. whatever. But anyway, so he had a really, anyway, I don't think we need to go into too much depth about this. A lot of people have talked about it. He had a really, what I thought, Simon Phipps had in this opinion piece, had an interesting take on this. And basically, he's saying this problem is being brought about because of the way we view how laws are created in restricting the freedoms of people in doing what they want with the code that they get as software, right? So,
okay, this, you're going to have to give me an example.
Yeah, so the I think the biggest one, I think he had three different areas. I'm just going to cover one, which I like, which is really something that's more of a Cary Doctorow type issue. But he says, okay, there's this, the digital media industry is trying to put DRM on everything, right?
Right.
Because they don't want people to copy it. Fine.
Mm-hmm.
We understand why they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is it doesn't work.
Right.
So how do you do? How do you handle that it doesn't work? Well, you make it that it's against the law to break your locks. So then if you break their DRM and you make a DRM-free copy, then that's against the law.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't work either.
No.
Because if just one person breaks the law anywhere in the world and then starts to put out the stuff, then now everybody still has access to it. So they made a law that you're not even allowed to tell people how
to tamper.
Exactly. You're not allowed to tell people how to break the lock or any information about them. Divulging any information about it is against the law. And they're really, really serious about this.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember that being on the old cassette tapes? There's this little plastic square at one end that covered it so that if it was there, it wouldn't record over your cassette tape.
No, that was not a DRM type thing.
I thought the ones that we bought that were write protected also had that. I mean the, you know, cassette tape thing.
So those things, when you bought a clean cassette, then the tab was across there, right? So that you could record.
Mm-hmm.
And when you had the and you could record over and over it, right?
Right.
And then when you were finally like, yeah, this is, I don't want this to be erased by mistake, I worked really hard at it, then you break the tab. And of course, stuff that you buy didn't have a tab there. Because, I mean, why would someone want to record over something they paid money for? So that was really useful, right? You don't want to sell cassettes that if you hit the record button, right, those things. Yeah, that's what, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
That was...
I thought they were also on purchased ones, but anyway.
No.
And I thought it controlled...
No. Here, go back to the picture. On purchased ones, they were missing.
Okay,
right?
Got it.
Because if you ever hit record on your thing and a purchased one was in there, it would destroy it. So
yeah.
this was a really good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so what Simon Phipps was writing here is that, you know, this went to a ridiculous point. Even then, it doesn't work. People are still hacking into stuff and everything.
Right.
But you've criminalized people allowing to look into their own stuff and tell everybody else, hey, this is the way this is put together.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've done that, and you stop that from happening, then companies will use that to do bad things because no one's allowed to look to see what they're doing.
Right, I see.
Right? It's against the law. If you let people know, I'm a little bit dubious about whether the connection with Volkswagen, would they have, I mean, if you didn't have those rules, they wouldn't have done this anyway.
I know.
Certainly, if you didn't have those rules, you could make the opposite rules and say, this is a life and death thing for people. You need to make this available, right? This is, you know, you could make rules like, you can't possibly make laws like that because you'd be making mutually inconsistent laws, but if you didn't have like the digital rights management laws that we have now, you could make those types of laws that say, yeah, if you know, there are certain categories of software where you have to let people know, or you have to make it available to some people to check what the hell is happening, because yes, we trust you, but we need to verify, right?
Right.
And Yeah, so it's, you know, it's not. I think he has a really good point. I don't know about the direct connection like this, you know, but certainly companies will act a lot more in the public interest if they know people are watching
Right.
more closely. And if you can make laws, then make it.
Right. Well, I have something to balance with that one.
Yep.
So I have this cool snapshot. It's the pollen-eyed bee taken takes for the Nikon Photography Prize, and this is one of the winners. And it's this bee, and you see the small yellow, almost cube, circular, or crystal-like things on top
The
of the
little
eye.
pollen
Yeah, the little pollen
blobs.
blobs.
It's really amazing
It is
looking.
so cool. So you see about.
And one of the things you can see on the picture is that, you know, there's all these little spiky hairs around the bee's eye,
Yeah.
but you can see that there's some coming straight out the eye. I
Yeah.
didn't realize that.
Yeah, so there's like these little eye, I don't know what you
They're
call them,
hairs of some
hairs.
kind. They have to
Yeah.
be, otherwise.
Right. And they may be something like a whisker that the cats have to con you know, to make sure they don't get things too close to their eyes, who knows. But anyway, very cool.
This was
And
published on Science Mag
yep,
site. Yep.
it was published on the Science Mag site. So neat and a cool award for people. It's called the Nikon Small World Photography Competition.
Yeah, that is an amazing picture.
Yeah. I love pictures where you look at it, it's like, wow. I never knew that's the way it looked
Yeah.
if you zoomed in. Anyway. Okay, back over to you.
Well, I don't know. This kind of really changed the topic from my type of stuff.
Oh, sorry.
I'm wondering, well, and I'm looking at the time,
Yep.
and I'm like, wow, I can't believe
Right. But
how
we did an intro to,
we had to kind of redo
we
the
had to kind
administrative
of,
stuff
yeah.
explaining the history of this because people are
Right.
going to get this without any explanation of where it came from, with half the site missing.
Right.
I mean, I'm going to work hard to get a lot of it up as soon as I can, but there's a lot of other demands on our time too. Oh my gosh. Do I have a blog entry due this Sunday?
Yes, you do.
Oh. Yipes. Okay. Oh, no, that's written already. Do you know what I was going to write about?
No.
The Avatar Club.
Oh, were you?
Yeah,
Oh,
and
that's
I
neat.
wrote it already.
Oh,
I
nice.
wrote it last after we came back.
Nice.
Yep. So, anyway. Well, these are supposed to be small finds. Maybe I'll just mention them real quick. Getting back to the stuff from Linux Voice, they had a fun. This is still back from issue 21. They had a fun article. It's not really an article. It's just a tiny little box about the Herd, which is HURD, the Herd. It's the operating system that doesn't really exist yet in a working as a working operating system. Not enough that you could use it for work or anything, as far as I know. But this my find or my minor topic or whatever is that. Oh my! I said my find. You know where that comes? I think they have a podcast where they say that.
Oh,
Maybe
really?
that's where I'm getting that. But anyway, so I yeah. Their kernel is called a microkernel, and the way I understand that is, you know, you have kernel space, which is stuff that runs your operating system, and then user space, which is all your programs. And I didn't totally understand that if a user space program crashes, a lot of your programs could get messed up by that. But normally, just that program crashes, which is a hell of a lot better than the old days where you could have one program crash and it would crash your whole computer.
Right.
But if your program is using something in kernel space, like a network adapter card, doing something through that, asking for special stuff, and the kernel space program that's getting these requests from your program crashes, mm-hmm. then your whole operating system could crash.
Right.
And that's usually what happens. So computers still crash. And with the microkernel, it's like almost everything goes into user space. And there's just a tiny little core, which means you can totally crash your like network card or your hard drive or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about this. It's totally new to me. But your computer would still keep running. So you could like make sure everything is saved and go up. So
oh, that's neat.
I thought that was kind of cool.
Yep.
Nice. And my last one, well, I think maybe we'll move off of the tech for now. Although, my last one was going to be an interview with Allison Randall out mm-hmm. of there, and I'll just point people. Check out Linux Voice 21 if you're interested. She has some really interesting ideas about the difference between open source and free software and how the battle is really thinking about it the wrong way. So, all of my other ones are either science or some of our building.
Okay. I have a quickie science one.
Okay.
Because we cannot have a podcast without mentioning
pigs.
Pigs and?
Pigs. Why pigs?
And CRISPR.
CRISPR. That's okay. One thing people won't understand either without the other podcast.
But so I've been mentioning CRISPR a lot. It's just fascinating.
It's not our fault.
No.
We got really interested in it a while ago, early in the year.
We did.
I don't mm-hmm. remember when.
It
had to do with CRISPR and Dicer.
Right.
But mostly.
And that was actually about a year ago where it really.
Is that before the podcast?
Yes.
Oh.
Before okay. our podcast. Because it was something that was starting to be used, and they were thinking, wow, you know, this has great potential.
But I remember when we were doing the podcast and we first did the CRISPR-Dicer thing.
Yes.
We thought we were just going to mention it once.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, it was just going to be an interesting thing, and then we're going to move on. And I don't know, but it might be every single podcast that it's come up. It's just like every week. And we're not even covering everything coming out with CRISPR.
Oh, no.
Every week there's been something new.
Right. And this one is looking at gene editing methods used in transplanting pig organs into people. And this one, they're going to use CRISPR to as an editing method for removing or destroying potentially harmful DNA sequences at 62 sites in the animal's genome. So this is
where are you getting this info from?
This is from Science.
Okay.
This is the article will probably be coming out in next week's Science magazine. This is their news article before it hits.
Uh-huh.
I'm looking forward to reading more about it. It just gives an overview of it and how the CRISPR technology is kind of raising hopes to being able to render pig organs fit for humans. So
cool.
I'm really looking forward to reading more about this and to really, hopefully it talks about the risks and benefits of it and what the benefit is of using CRISPR. And I'm wondering if they're going to give more specifics about the CRISPR, they're using it with Cas9 or what system they're using. Just out of total curiosity. But very cool stuff. Fascinating. Just the amount of information that they're hoping that it will uncover. And the ability to do things that we haven't been able to do.
Wow, that's going to be really interesting.
It is. So
I can't imagine. Like, the idea is to make the pig organs transplantable. But they're just.
Want to hear something really cool?
Yeah.
They've opened a place at NC State in the last 2 years, and they've been working towards this. So I don't know how far the process has gone at NC State, but one part of the farm is actually designated.
This is so terrible. We're being really parochial because we're so used to people knowing where we are. But we're in North Carolina.
Yes, North Carolina.
That's North Carolina State University in Raleigh.
Right. So and I know that North Carolina State University actually has a pig facility that's designated for organ research and organ transplant.
Very cool.
So very cool. And that's another reason why this article caught my eye was like, oh, hometown science. Anyway, your turn.
So sticking with science then. Mm-hmm. I only have one other one that I'm wanting to. I was going to talk about liquid helium, but actually that article was not. I'll just mention, since these are minor topics. Both of mine are from AAAS, but the liquid helium just somehow, I guess the field is really shrinking, even though it's still just as cool as it was before. It's like people are not getting into it. So that was kind of interesting. But the one I'll talk a little bit more about, I'll still call it minor, is an article out of the October 16th issue, and it's a feature article, and it's about these exoskeletons, and the reason it caught my eye is because our son Luke is really into this type of stuff.
Right.
Actually, I just sent him an email with the article. But I didn't realize how far back these exoskeletons, which are basically just, up to now at least, rigid structural materials with hinges strapped onto people, and then with motors to actuate them, to try to help the person carry more load and get less tired. And the article really says they've been an absolute failure, as far as I can tell. The biggest problem being that when you're walking, you have... What are you looking at?
I'm going to explain. Don't you dare look.
Okay.
You'll remember.
It looks like soccer. Is that the... I won't even... Okay. So, basically, the big problem is that when we walk, we don't really... We're doing things with our neuromuscular system that we don't totally understand yet. And this is really being proved by this work on exoskeletons, because everyone so far that's been created... where they've tried to just have it help you, the people that use them, when you're measuring their oxygen intake and calculating, you know, how much energy they're using even more energy wearing the suit than without. And the reason is the suit can't reproduce our gait and our changes of gait, and then you have to end up fighting it. To do the exact same activity.
Right.
And this article kind of features not only but fairly prominently a new system called soft exoskeleton. I think that's what they call it. And basically it's not a rigid frame, but it's straps you wrap around your legs and your body. And there's little wires, and it doesn't try to help you all the time, but in two places in the gait, it yanks on these strings and helps for part of your gait. And when it does that, saves you just a bit of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And the big waha is that on a treadmill with someone working at, as far as I understand, for the very first time, someone was able to walk using up less energy with the thing turned on compared to turned off.
Yep.
But the thing is, they comparing it with it turned on to turned off, not compared to it turned on versus not wearing it.
Right.
Which seems like, you know, you have to carry this big battery.
Right.
So, and then on top of that, they were testing it in the field, which is really good. And they hadn't put out the results by the time this was out. But the impression I got is, no, the person's not saving energy when they're doing anything but the most controlled stepping on a treadmill. So it's a big advance, mm-hmm. right? It's really cool technology.
Yeah.
But really, it's got a very long way to go.
Right. So with the exoskeleton, mm-hmm. do you remember the World Cup in Brazil? They were supposed to showcase an exoskeleton being used with paraplegics. And they were...
And they did.
And they did. But, of course, they didn't get it on the video because something...
Yeah, something went wrong.
Something went wrong with the camera that was supposed to film it.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty cool what, you know, they're doing in terms of getting people up and moving
that
never had that opportunity.
Now, see, that's a different problem, right?
Yeah.
That's actually...
It is, but I think both technologies start to come together when they're thinking of similar problems,
yeah.
you know, movement.
But I'm sure a person, I get, my point is, that's a right now, a more pressing problem, right? You have people that can't walk,
mm-hmm.
and it's a problem that's more solvable. I mean,
yeah.
it would help to spend more effort on that.
Right.
Because you have people that can't walk, that would love to be able to walk,
mm-hmm.
and it would give them a different posture for part of their day.
Mm-hmm.
And for it to be a success, you don't have them, you don't need to have a system where they just feel perfectly comfortable walking and can do anything standing up. Well, otherwise they'd be in a wheelchair.
Right.
All you have to do to be a success as a first step is to make a kid that it's good enough that someone would really like to spend some of the time in it and actually get to just walk around a bit, right?
Right.
I think we're not there yet, but that seems like it's a goal that should be, if we spend enough into it, I think that's a goal that would be reached a lot earlier than, although the software...
Right.
Skeleton sounds interesting.
So they show the setup that they had for the
mm-hmm.
World Cup, and, you know, it may have even gotten a little smaller
when
now.
When was that?
It was in Brazil.
In Brazil, yeah.
Yeah,
but that was a while ago, wasn't it?
Last year.
Oh, was it just last
yeah.
year?
I thought it was just last year.
I thought it was
year.
Further than that.
Because
okay.
the kids and I were talking about it, and we're talking about, I was talking about how disappointed I was with that.
Yeah, everybody wanted to see the
yeah.
movie, and there was so much hype
yeah.
about it.
And so...
I was happy to see... You know, they had a small clip that didn't really show much, but...
Yeah.
I was happy with what I saw, you know. It was... I thought it was really cool.
Yeah. I just think it's amazing that, you know, we have materials, and we're improving materials, so it's getting to be something that will be more and more of an option for people.
Let me see. DuckDuckGo World Cup.
Exoskeleton.
Soccer. Paraplegic. Do they call it an exoskeleton?
That's what I did, and it came up.
And it came up?
Yep.
See if it comes up. Kickoff soccer after. São Paulo, Brazil. That's the right place. I don't see it. World Cup opening ceremony feature. Yeah, I think you're right. I think 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Wow. Just seems like it was
I know.
Longer time.
So, very interesting stuff, and I just thought it filled in well with what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was perfect, actually.
So, and it just came to mind because you had talked to me
Yeah,
about
yeah.
it in the car earlier
Yeah.
this week, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, so tell me about what you've been building.
Well, it's actually not a building, although I think we will have this made by Oshpark, but with all this time I had on my hands, when I had my computer, which was only for part of it, I took the SI5351 breakout board that's being sold by different people, made slightly different ways, but everybody seems to have basically the same pattern, and made our own version of it. And the reason for it is that the SI5351 is a chip used to generate electrical signals with frequencies up to, I think it can go up to 160 megahertz. And we're going to use them in the transmitters we talked about. And we used a board from Adafruit. And, you know, we don't want to have to put a whole separate board onto our transmitter. And so I thought, okay, I've got nothing here that I can work on the transmitter, but I have all the information for these breakout boards. And I figured, well, maybe we'll just have a few made from Oshpark, and then if they work, we'll feel a bit more confidence. And in putting it down and having it this huge board made, I mean, it's not huge, but a lot bigger than just a tiny breakout like this. And one of the reasons is that the SI5351 can only be purchased as a, or the largest package that can be purchased is a 10-pin MSOP, which is, I mean, I have never soldered anything that small. That is absolutely minuscule. I did find a breakout board. You remember how I
Nice.
showed you?
Yep.
It was hard to find. I found it at Mouser. So, and we just got it in. Just was it a couple days ago, or? So I'm going to try it out. Anyway, so yeah, I
Nice.
designed the board, and it's basically got an I2C interface that can take in 5 volts and convert it to 3.3 volts because the SI5351 is a 3.3 volt chip. It's got a voltage converter on there also, because so you can power it with 5 volts instead of 3.3, and it's got 3 clock outputs, which we're only going to use one, but like that I can test all three. And it's a lot bigger than the other breakout boards, but I mean, that's the point, is we want to be able to test this thing. So used KiCad, which is very cool. Had man, so this is was my find. We've had an Oshpark board made before, but we didn't put any mounting holes on it. So this is a thing. KiCad doesn't have a system to create mounting holes. So you see the mounting holes on our board? They're, you know, these are the screw holes,
Oh, yes.
right? The way you have to do it in KiCad is you actually choose a pad that's a through-hole component, and you place that on there, just totally separately from your schematic. And then you say, you go into its properties and you make it that it's not plated through, so there's no metal on the inside, right? But then what I found out is if you do that and you send it to us, OSH Park, you'll get boards back that will, they'll be just totally messed up, because KiCad creates one drill file for the non-plated through holes and another drill file for the true holes, which are these guys. And so you get two drill files, you send them to Oshpark, but Oshpark only reads one drill file. So I'm going to have to figure out how to handle that before I send it in. I found a bunch of ways on the web. But, the complexities of this that can really get you if you're not careful.
Yeah. Patrick will probably be posting that on his blog sometime soon, so you can see it.
I think I'll post it if we send it and have it made and it works.
And mount it.
Yeah.
And everything's because mounted.
This is
it.
Kind of a really early.
Right.
I mean, so we talked about. I mean, we agreed that we'd probably send it when we were talking about it, but.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that's totally decided yet.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, it's almost ready to. Well, no, I haven't solved the problem with the mounting holes.
Right.
Yet. That's a big one. Supposedly there's a place where you can. I can make them plated through, I suppose. It's not going to make a difference in price. But, I mean, it seems kind of silly, right?
Right.
It should be a problem that's solved. So, and there's a lot of other stuff, including getting that frickin' driver to work on the transmitter. Mm-hmm. But anyway. Let me see. Is that all I had?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
Major topic?
Major topic.
I can't believe we're starting a major topic after an hour.
I know.
That's amazing. This was going to be a pretty small major topic, though.
Right, it is. It's not, we aren't going to go on for too long.
No.
Okay.
And we kind of already decided minor topics just means, it doesn't mean they're going to be talked about for a shorter or longer amount of, I mean, minor topics are not necessarily going to be talked about for a shorter amount of time.
Right.
It's just in our minds, it was not something that we were ready to go in depth about.
Right.
As much.
Right.
So the major topic was your find.
Yeah, it was. So I got really excited when I read this article in Science, how crops or crop killing witchweed, affects crops. And Patrick, do you have the name of it? How crop killing witchweed senses its victim.
Yeah.
And it's in volume 350, number 6257 of Science for October 9th, 2015.
Right. Yeah, that's, I have that. Is that the same one that you have up?
No, this one's a little.
No, I think it's.
Is
the
it?
Same. Or
it's just written.
Go down
in
a bit.
Different.
I just wanted to see if I'm. Yeah. No, I have the same.
Okay.
The reason we're stalling like this is you're on the online version and I'm on the PDF version. So then.
Right.
But there are other articles about the witchweed.
Right.
That have come up at the same time. So.
So we were, I was just trying to look at different ones.
Yeah.
So basically, witchweed is a big problem in Asia and Africa.
Yeah.
And there was an outbreak in the Carolinas, which was eradicated in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have Patrick talk about the mechanism. How does witchweed affect a crop?
So, okay, I'm not going to look at the article because we'll go into depth.
Right.
But I think I understand this fairly well on a mm-hmm. high level. Plants use hormones to control different aspects of growth and development, just like we do.
Right.
And some of these hormones control germination and some of them root branching and other mm-hmm. things. And, of course, these hormones will leak out at the roots.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to end up in the soil. On top of that, hormones are also used in a different way, where they're purposefully leaked out of the roots. I don't know if that's purposefully is a good word, but that's mm-hmm. what I'll use, to affect other plants. So
right.
not internally. And the most common reason this is done is that, well, not maybe the most common, I wouldn't say that. Maybe it is the most common, I don't know, but one of the ones that's fairly well understood is plants that need nitrogen
mm-hmm.
get a beneficial relationship when they associate with fungi
mm-hmm.
that fix nitrogen.
Right.
And you get these nitrogen-fixing nodules where the plant associates with the fungi in the roots.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from when we were in college, I remember, isn't alder one of the plants that has a lot of, that does that a lot?
Yeah, I think you're right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So the plant starts to grow
mm-hmm.
and releases this hormone into the soil, and then the fungi sense the soil and know to start growing. And then they root from the plant, and fungi get into contact because the fungi is growing more from having sensed this hormone, and then they associate together. The fungi gets the benefit of having some nutrients from the plant, and at the same time, well, I guess it's mostly energy from the plant's photosynthesis.
Right.
That's what I would guess. And the plant has the benefit of getting nitrogen fixed right from in the soil, but that's not organic nitrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And so then suddenly it's available for the plant to create more biomass.
Right.
So that's what happens in nature when you don't have the parasite around. The parasite, the striga plants, also known as witchweed,
mm-hmm.
sense these hormones.
Right.
And they sense the hormones at unbelievably low level. And
right.
these new articles found that they can be sensed. Well, actually, maybe this has been known, how sensitive it is earlier this year, because there were three articles, one published on the same issue of Science
mm-hmm.
as this one, as the, this is a, is this a Perspective or a News? News in Depth is at the top of the page on my side.
Mm-hmm.
But there was two other articles also focusing on striga plants and the mechanism for sensing. And they're finding they can sense hormones at picomolar concentrations, which is something like, I think, three orders of magnitude lower than other plant, than the plants themselves can sense it. So that's really
mm-hmm.
pretty cool. Would it be three orders lower than even the fungi? I don't know.
Right. I'm looking for it right now as you talk.
Yeah. Anyway, so.
Oh, here we go.
The striga seeds are in the
more
soil.
Than five orders of magnitude.
Smokes.
More than the normal to.
No. This is very specific. This is one receptor, HTL7.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that's the one from striga. Yeah, that's right.
It's right.
Yeah, that was put into, it's so transgenic. They used Arabidopsis.
Right.
Arabidopsis is used all over plant mm-hmm. science as a model organism. And just the way we use mice and rats. And they put a striga HTL gene in there, HTL being the receptor for the strigolactones, those hormones. And made a transgenic Arabidopsis. Yeah, because striga doesn't grow really well
mm-hmm.
in the lab.
Right.
And there's other reasons why people don't use it in the lab. But where was I going with this?
Oh, and there's the other thing. In the plant itself, the parasite plants receptors for the striga.
For the striga lactone.
Yeah, is twice as big a pocket binding as other plants.
So it's the HTL receptor. So this I actually know quite a bit about because that is in the research article, the original
right.
research from there, which I read when I had all this time on my hand.
Mm-hmm.
and So this is more about the specific. This is not about the article we're reviewing now. This is about the original research article mm-hmm. published in Science. And one of the things they did is they took a bunch of different HTL receptors from Striga plants. So those are the parasites. And
right.
they placed them, and Striga, I think, has normally, most of the Striga parasites have 11 HTL genes. Mm-hmm. Arabidopsis only has one. So they made the Arabidopsis, if I remember correctly, I might have this wrong, but they made the Arabidopsis defective in that one HTL gene. Mm-hmm. And HTL gene is for the receptor.
Right.
And then they made a transgenic Arabidopsis where they added in different plants different of those 11 HTL genes from Striga.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put strigolactone in different concentrations.
Mm-hmm.
around these Arabidopsis seeds that they created and saw at what concentrations they would germinate.
Right.
And HTL7 was just unbelievable in how sensitive it was. And if you looked at the binding pocket, so they also crystallized
mm-hmm.
Some of these receptors, and they did modeling mm-hmm. of the structure from the genetic sequence.
Right.
And what they found was that
here we are.
The binding pocket in the HTL receptor from both the crystal and the modeling was a lot larger
mm-hmm.
than it was in the HTL gene that Arabidopsis had
right.
originally.
Mm-hmm.
And the HTL gene for in Arabidopsis, I don't think it's supposed to bind strigolactones. Here I'm on a lot shakier ground. But it has another gene called D14, which is used to bind strigolactones.
Mm-hmm.
D14 in Arabidopsis also has a large binding pocket. But the conformation of the pocket has other things that allows it, in HTL7 at least, to bind at picomolar concentrations. And, I mean, I don't want to go too much further into why that's significant, because I haven't looked at it carefully enough to really
right.
know the story off the back of my hand. But the point is, there was a mystery. Because D14 was sensing strigolactones in the Arabidopsis, but D14 does not cause germination in Arabidopsis.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, well, so what the hell is happening? We found a receptor for strigolactones, but it's not causing germination.
Right.
Well, that's because Arabidopsis doesn't use strigolactones for germination.
Right.
It's not a parasite.
Right.
It's using it for different things. But it does have HTL, that one HTL gene, and that one is involved
mm-hmm.
in germination.
Right.
And when you took out, and when you look in Striga plants, the witchweeds,
mm-hmm.
you find the HTL genes.
And nice.
Through the sequence, they also did some comparative analysis across species and evolution type analysis, and they found, well, it looks like there was a duplication early on in history of the HTL gene.
Right.
And then in parasitic plants, you have a whole new group, which they called group 2,
uh-huh.
which evolved, and they became very sensitive and they
mm-hmm.
for strigolactones.
Mm-hmm.
Where normally they're not so sensitive for that. And since they were genes for receptors that encode germination, that really helped out.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't finish going into the basic mechanism. The striga plant, the witchweed, has seeds that are incredibly hardy.
Right.
And they stay in the, they get put in the soil and they stay there forever.
Right.
When a host plant shows up and germinates, it sends out those hormones. The seed senses it and it germinates immediately. Right.
That's the trigger to get it to germinate. Yeah.
And then it makes contact with the plant that sent out the hormones.
Right.
And the second it makes contact, it just sucks everything out of it as fast as it can. The plant's trying to grow, and it's using up all its energy from its seed, and it's got a few leaves out, so it's getting energy from the sun.
Right.
And then it just can't keep up with this energy-sucking stuff on its root, and it dies. And suddenly you have this beautiful purple flower that shows up next to it,
right,
which is the striga.
Right.
And that's why it's so hard to get rid of.
Right. And they also drop 100,000 seeds.
Oh.
Every time.
Wow.
So it's a huge amount of seeds for one plant. And then those little seeds are hardy to boot.
Yeah.
So you really have...
And you can imagine, I mean, I
a pervasive pest, yeah. You know, yeah, to deal with. Yeah. So anyway.
I love
so very
the idea
interesting.
Of suicidal... what was
yes.
that? Suicidal
I just had
germination?
It yep. So.
Oh, that's a crop control thing.
Yeah. This is for...
Or it's a parasite control.
Right.
Thing, suicidal germination. Yeah, you spray a field with strigolactones or something.
So
I mean, I don't know if that's...
So you can
with the
get...
Day, but with a hormone-like molecule.
Yeah.
Cause them to germinate, but you haven't planted anything there
right.
yet. So... Sorry, I kind of took over your article, but you asked about the HTL, and I had read the original article.
No, I knew you had, and I knew that you had just read it recently.
I read it after you.
Yeah.
When I had all this time on my hands.
Right. So I wanted to make sure that we went over it. So this week, I had something kind of crazy happen to me, and I just wanted to mention it.
Oh, are we back to our...
Yeah,
to our notes.
And it's under recently completed projects. So Avatar. We mentioned your work and your Oshpark boards that are in the making and almost ready to send off with a minor modification.
Yeah.
And
are you going to talk about funding?
Funding, yeah, that's what I was going to.
Oh,
so
I don't have this on here.
No, I thought I put it on, but I didn't. I put it on after I shared it with you. So this week I had this neat opportunity through Donors Choose. I got this email like 3 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was right before our last podcast, and it said, if you have a STEM project, and you're interested in participating in this virtual STEM event, fill out this form. So I went in there, I filled out the form. I'm like, hey, Pat, will you just proofread this paragraph? Make sure it sounds good. And you proofread it for me, and then I sent in the form. Done. And I'm like, oh, we probably won't hear anything, but it may, you know, may mean funding later on, so I don't want to lose an opportunity. And, you know, very little information. Then on Friday, after I submitted, I get this notice saying, hey, you've been chosen for the STEM event. You're one of 49 teachers chosen from 49 different states that will be participating. You have one slot to participate. We will send you numbers and that later. And still not a lot of information. And then, the following week, I check my Donors Choose and my project's been suspended. And then I get another email saying, if your project's been suspended, don't worry. It means good things. It means something good. Okay. So don't worry. It is nothing you did. It's just been suspended in that. And so then on Tuesday night, or Monday night, I should say, I came home and I called the number to be on the Donors Choose, be part of their virtual STEM event. And There are 49 other callers that are all calling. We're all on a conference call together, and everyone's on the conference call going, do you know what's going to be happening? So first we introduce ourselves.
I can't even imagine a 49.
Yeah. So we get on there, and so you say, hello, and my name's Kelly Sears, and I'm from North Carolina. And then you hear, hello, my name's so-and-so, I'm from Iowa. And all of the states are mentioned. It was just very strange, and it was exciting because it's like, I don't care what happens. This is just kind of cool.
Except for California, right? There were many from California.
There are many from California.
And one from each other state.
Yeah. Okay. So there are 50 teachers chosen in California as the STEM teachers. These are teachers who are chosen by the Donors Choose team in California, who have consistently wrote STEM grants from Donors Choose. So, you know, we're still listening on. And then we have this woman, Katie, come on, and she goes, okay, you're going to be on hold for a few minutes. We're probably going to start this event in about 10 minutes. So she, like, you know, puts us on silent. And then we start talking to each other. So what did you put? So what is your, what's your project? What's your project? So what grades do you teach? So everybody said their grade. Everybody said their project, you know.
But how does that work with 49? Just
people were just taking turns. Like,
taking turns?
There's one question asked, and then we all took turns and answered it. Yeah. And then another question be asked, and we took turns. And
was there a specific order?
No, not at all. It was just when there was a pause, someone said, so you waited for a pause, and then you said yours, right?
Cool.
And so it was just nice that this sharing was going on in this orderly fashion. And then later on, we had specific questions about certain types of projects. Hey, has anyone ever done this? I'm going to do it soon, and I want to know where I should look for it. And then someone would come back with a response if they had done it, which was, it was just neat.
That is amazing.
And so while we're on there, of course, we're on hold for 10 minutes. So we all have our email up, and we're deleting all the email, the junk mail that we get. And then someone goes, oh, I've just been funded. Because they got an email saying they have funded. So when they said that, I thought, oh, shoot, I didn't get funded, you know. And I opened up my Donors Choose account. And I'm looking at the Donors Choose account. I'm like, well, I haven't been funded. But then another person goes, oh, I've just been funded, too. Oh, I just got funded, too. I just got funded, too. And I'm thinking, wow, that's great. But I don't think I got funded. And then suddenly there's like the donor bar for how much money you have. It suddenly shoots across my screen to full funding. And I'm like, I just got funded. So everybody in our group got funded in a matter of 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And then
I have to say, it's so unbelievable. It's like when you were telling me, I didn't understand what you were explaining.
I know, it was
the
just,
first time.
Yeah. So it was just hard to explain to what's happening. And it was so joyful because you have people going, guess what? I just got my project funded. Because they're yelling it back to people at home, like, you know, people in their residence. And then they would come back to the phone. And then
what was your project for?
My project was for two Google or Chromebooks, I should say, two Chromebooks for to work with the 3D printer to print projects with the 3D printer, as well as for carrying around with us with Avatar to do blogs and posts when we're out at places.
Gotcha.
Because there's so many places that have free Wi-Fi.
This is like the school makerspace blogs.
Right.
That's cool. Yeah.
Right. So this is part of the makerspace and
the kids' blogs.
The kids' blogs. So they're going to be blogging when we're out. And cool, I think I'll be able to set up that when we go to the museum, they will be Skyping with a grad assistant who just called me because she really wants me to work on a lesson plan. And she doesn't know it yet, but she's totally going to be snookered into Skyping with my kids when we're in Raleigh.
Yeah, I remember. That's a grad student from in someone's lab that you worked with like a year ago or something?
Right. And what now was... you're going to make me look up his name because I just want to make sure I have it. Okay.
But what was his area of research?
So he works in oceanography. So he's a marine biologist.
Uh-huh. Is he at UNC?
He's at UNC. Oh, here we go.
So that he...
It's Dr. Adrian Marchetti.
Uh-huh. He's at University of North Carolina.
North Carolina, Chapel Hill.
Okay.
And he looks at plankton.
Uh-huh.
And his grad student is using part of the funding, and she's on another grant, to go down to Antarctica for a month in January. I always wanted to go to Antarctica. I hope she doesn't get sick and I have to go in her place. Won't happen, but anyway. Very cool. She's going down there and she wants to Skype with us when she's there. But I think we need to practice here to make sure our technology is working. And so I'm going to ask her if she wouldn't mind Skyping with us when we go into the museum. So just kind of a fun, happy chance thing.
That reminds me of when you went to New Zealand to do the research on the...
On the Margins Grant with Dr.
Gould.
Clark Alexander.
No, Clark, mm-hmm. Gould.
Dr. Fred Gould is NC State, and I worked with him with the Keenan Fellowship, right. And I'll be teaching out his stuff on Monday with a group of 30 North Carolina teachers, so I'm looking forward to that too.
Very cool.
So that's the Keenan Workshop.
Alexander? What's the...
So Dr. Clark Alexander, he's the geologist that worked on the Margins Grant, and it was under his grant that I got to go to New Zealand.
Okay.
And be on the research vessel.
You're doing so much stuff, I'm getting confused.
So very cool stuff, but I just wanted to share with you about the Donors Choose opportunity, because very little information was really put across on emails and that. It was just a lot of fun, and it was meant to be a big surprise for teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see something through Donors Choose like that, know that great things are going to happen, and just apply. And who knows what will come, but you may have your grant totally funded, and at least two of the teachers of the 49, and I think there were more because, you know, I'd only hear voices, so I couldn't tell. Mm-hmm. They had 3 grants funded all at once.
Wow.
We were all funded up to $1,000.
Wow, that's really cool.
And they said, oh, we funded everyone up to $1,000. My grant was for $1,036. They funded it anyway.
Right, cool.
So it's just nice. And that was all done by Chevron. And I think that it's just fabulous that they funded, 100 teachers in one 20-minute session. And it just made it really exciting and fun.
Yeah, it's not a huge amount for them, but it's a fair bit of money when you think,
And
50 teachers times, that's about 100 teachers.
Yeah.
That's $100,000.
$100,000 there. Yeah. And, you know, what's exciting is that they made it so now we can do things with the students that we could not have done without their funding.
Yep.
You know, the things we have.
Well, thank you, Chevron.
Yeah. Thank you, Chevron. Cool. Definitely. I really appreciate you taking the time to work with us and to just provide something that's goofy and fun. And just, you know, gave us a lift to a kind of, you know, long and holiday list time of the year. It's our long desert time.
Also, a lot of work goes into writing these grants. And when they come in, you really get to, you know, you can do things that you just... No one applies for them that are teachers that haven't thought really carefully about what they need and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's extra work on top of all the stuff that you have to
Even
do.
Even small grants, they take like 2 to 3 hours.
And there's no guarantees.
Just in writing. No.
So.
No, because you're trying to look for the materials, make sure the materials are right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think this is what I want. Okay, this is what I'm going to try. If I get it, I'll do this with the kids. And I have to say, the kids get really excited. And it's funny because some of the kids are like, wow, so does that mean we get to do? Which is fun. It's good.
The Makey Makeys, they were part of it.
They were through Donor's Shoes. That's as well as the Raspberry Pis.
Yeah, the raspberry. Mm-hmm. So both of those are two that I've seen in action.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
The kids just
go
wild, and
I call them sandbox activities.
Yeah, right. That's a perfect way to think about it.
Because the kids go in and they start playing, and they start looking at what other people are doing around them, but they don't necessarily do that same activity or same project. But that project gives that child a chance to think, oh, I can do that, but I can do something different too.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they maneuver it to do something slightly different.
Yeah.
And I really think that's very, it's a good way to learn. It's
I totally agree.
You're invested in doing something because you see a value in it, and you want to achieve a certain thing. So you go around and you figure out how to do small parts so you can put it all together.
Yeah. Yeah. And those self-appointed, it's not even a goal.
No.
It's more like just this, I want to see if I can figure out how to do
exactly
this.
And I think that's really what STEM education is just giving them an opportunity to take some of their science, use technology, use their math, and really create something and follow it through the design stage and the implementation, because there's all kinds of issues that happen in those two stages. And I think it's a great growing curve.
Future plans,
yes, workshop.
Do you know why I'm pushing on to future plans?
Why?
Well, I just wanted to stick with your plan.
Yeah.
When we started this, I'm like, well, you know, we'll just, I know we're have, we don't have much time, but I think it's going to be an hour.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's the way it always turns out. And like, no, we want to make it short. And I'm like, no, we can, I think we'll keep it to an hour, but we don't need, you know, trying to make it shorter than that just hasn't worked. And here we are working on an hour and a half.
I know, it's
and
crazy.
Who's talking on?
I'm sorry, I got off on my little podium.
But that's fine. That's fine.
Okay.
So, future plans.
Future plans.
For you.
Keenan.
For you?
Yep, Keenan. I have a Keenan workshop.
That's on
Monday.
Monday.
And have mucho travail yep. to do for it, but it's all good, and yep. I think it'll be a good opportunity.
Well, for me, it's getting back to all of the stuff we were doing to get ARDF working with the kids and getting the Island CT website up and running a lot more.
Right.
Than it is right now. Every podcast, we're like, we're so busy. We need to do this and this. We have all these great ideas, but most of it just never gets done because there's not the time. And, you know, I was saying I did this and this with all the time I had on my hand.
Right.
Which is, you know, well, I don't want to talk about it, but it's not what people think. I don't have all this time in my hand. We'll just say, if you end up in the hospital, you will have a lot of time on your hands to do whatever you can with what you have there. And I had science and the Linux Voice magazines.
Right. And a computer.
Well, actually, I didn't have the computer for the first day and a half.
I brought it the next day.
Yeah. We were in there the whole first day.
Without
anything.
So
I only had it half the time.
Yeah.
So that's why I knew which weed a little bit better and had these other articles. So I'm going to be working on those two things, the transmitter and then a few other things related to that, and then our website to try to get back up. I mean, it is up,
right,
but just to, and I'll try to get this podcast up on by Sunday evening.
Okay.
So whoever's listening to this, it'll probably be, what, is that 3 days from now?
Okay. So,
and is that all?
Yep, that's everything.
So let's wrap it up.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Island CD podcast.
Make sure you check out our blog.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.